One of the most recognizable voices in American journalism joins us for a candid conversation. Chris Cuomo on the moments that defined his career, what he's learned from the inside of major newsrooms, and why he believes the media and the country are at a turning point. No talking points, no shouting, just an honest conversation about the state of America and the future of the news. I'm Scottie Nell Hughes, and the state of America from Chris Cuomo's perspective starts right now. Joining us this week for the first of a two-part series is one of the most consequential figures in modern American journalism. Chris Cuomo's career has spanned the front lines of some of the most defining moments in recent history. Now, he began as a correspondent covering law enforcement and justice, earning national attention for his in-depth reporting on major criminal cases. He went on to co-anchor ABC's 2020, where he tackled complex investigative stories and long-form interviews that demanded both toughness and nuance. Cuomo later became a central figure at CNN, serving as the network's chief legal correspondent, and eventually anchoring Cuomo's primetime, a role that placed him at the center of the national convention during moments of crisis, from political upheaval to the COVID-19 pandemic. Night after night, he questions leaders, challenges narratives, and helps shape how Americans understand events as they unfold in real time. Now, he's continued this format for the last few years, launching the newest cable TV news network, News Nation, where he anchors the nightly primetime show. Now, along the way, he's interviewed presidents, governors, attorney generals, global power brokers, and while also navigating the pressures, the scrutiny, and the evolution of a media industry undergoing rapid change. Now, few journalists have experienced the highs, the controversies, and the transformations of the modern newsroom as directly as publicly as Chris Cuomo. So this conversation goes beyond today's headlines. What we're talking about, what he's learned from decades inside the media, how journalism has changed, and what he believes the American public deserves from those entrusted with telling the nation's story. Thank you, Chris, for joining me, as I am very interested in getting your perspective on everything. So you've covered everything from crime, law, politics, everything under the sun. And national crisis, this goes beyond just ABC, CNN. Looking back, which moment do you really feel like most changed how you personally understood power and accountability here in America?
9/11.
Okay.
9/11. One step sideways. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. I'm back on air.
Good luck in all things. And I'm a friend and
yes.
I'm a fan. 9/11.
Where were you on 9/11?
In New York City. And I was working at ABC News. And I wound up taking a pizza delivery bicycle because everything was shut down and biking down to where it was. And I did not go there to cover the story. I went there because I had friends who I couldn't find and I couldn't contact. And a lot of them wind up dying. And it changed what I thought life, even thinking about it now, I still get emotionally disturbed by what it was. I thought that this was going to keep happening. It was so easy for them to do. It was so devastating. It was also so fortifying to the American spirit in a way that I had never seen before. They were five fingers into a fist very quickly after that moment, as you well remember. But that was the moment, Scotty, where I was like, what I do matters in a different way. And this is not a game. This is not hype. This is often life and death. And we are witnesses to that history.
And yet the way that we covered 9/11, the events that happened that day, has evolved, has changed a lot. Even looking back then, we didn't know everything that was going on at that time and the events that happened after because of it. Do you wish that at the time, do you feel like that we were being told everything as the best as possibility when that day happened?
I don't think it's ever the case.
Okay.
You know, I think that judging a moment in the moment is different than hindsight. That's why we say hindsight is 20/20. Do I believe it was a conspiracy? No. Do I think it happened? Yes, I watched it. But I would always go back. I know we're not supposed to say that as partners and parents. Oh, I wouldn't go back because then I wouldn't be where I am. And I would. I would redo everything if I could, but that's not how life works.
Well, most people don't realize you went to law school. You're a lawyer by trade. You did not really necessarily see yourself going into journalism.
No, grew up in a household that didn't like the media.
Do they still like the media? Okay.
It depends who you're asking. When my father's comment to me, may he rest in peace, when I was leaving the law and finance to come into this was, why can't you just, if you don't want to do this, fine, but do something that matters to society, like sell crack.
That's what his perspective was on this.
But I made my own way.
So how did that day change you then as a journalist in covering stories at the moment, especially breaking news stories?
Life and death. I think often in this business, more so these days than when we started, it's artificial. It's manufactured. Division is manufactured. It's amplified by algorithms online. People are opportunists. Right. They're in the business to provoke. They're to outrage, to get clicks, rage bait, and ragement is engagement.
Right.
That's always existed. And that day, 9/11, everything was real. Nothing needed to be exaggerated. The truth was overwhelming as it was, and it was life and death. And it was the reality that there are forces in this world that want to destroy what America is. And it was a test of what are our limits on that? What are we willing to do to preserve who we are? And how much of us is a we? Which is a question that dogs us to this day.
I also think there was the lack of political fighting that happened that day, at least for the first few, common enemy. They all were together. But at the same time, that eventually split it up.
Oh, yeah.
And the Republicans started going after Democrats. Democrats started blaming Republicans.
Could you imagine today, though?
That's what I'm saying. Did it have to take a crisis for the United States? Something major happening on that day? We had it with COVID. We didn't unite under COVID. So did it have to take something as major as a terrorist attack to find unity in America today?
I mean, look, I would like to say no. Then I would like to say yes, but the real answer is I don't know what would be big enough. I don't know, especially with this current administration. I mean, does it strain credulity to think that the president would say, Democrats did it. This is what you get. This is what happened. These are their people, these jihadis, you saw during the Palestine thing. And that they blame each other. I don't know that we would be where we were in 2001. I'd like to think so. But I think that if I were getting on Kalshi, that wouldn't be my bet.
Well, that's the thing. And what is the influence of social media and the citizen journalists and everybody having phones now? Is that also helped more divide us than it necessarily did back on 9/11?
My opinion,
right,
100%, is more always better? No, except when you're dealing with kindness, right?
Right.
Democratization of media, great. Love it as a concept. I don't think you can look at what's happening on social media by design, by the way. Okay, that's the part that pisses me off.
Right.
By design. And think that it's made our politics better. I don't think you can look at it and say that and be reasonable. So I think right now, and it's just starting, it's just evolving, but right now, I don't think it's a force for making things better.
At the same time, you know, the only people that people trust less than politicians are the media. You say that's by design. It's historic lows. Based on your experience, is there any way you feel like that this has actually been earned? The media has earned this title to not be trusted? Or how much of it is being exploited because they're, once again, we're in a ratings game?
Good question. Ratios of responsibility are very subjective. And what people do is they default to a false premise. Is the media perfect? No, but, you know, we've gotten answers like that 100 times. Nobody's talking about perfection. It's talking about whether it's even the minimum standard. And I think there are definitely problems. What I don't like is that the response to, let's say me, that I haven't gotten it done the way people want me to consistently. So the answer is to do it worse, because that's my problem with it. You want to do it better,
right?
Fine. But you're doing it worse, and you're doing it worse on purpose. And you're saying the reason for that is because I made it okay to be bad. So I don't agree with the rationale. I think it's an excuse structure. But yeah, trust is earned. Distrust is earned. And we're in a trough. You can't tell me anything that people respect right now. I don't know. We were saying the other day, who can Scotty Nell Hughes tell me is universally loved and respected? Who? I don't know. I don't know. I don't know who I would pick. Maybe for a second, the quarterback from Indiana for winning the way he did. But he's such a big Christian. How long until that becomes, you know, a knock on him? You know, so...
Some would say Donald Trump used to be that way until he actually got political.
I don't know. You didn't hear me say it. I've always seen him as a pot stirrer.
Because you're a New Yorker. You know the backstory.
I grew up with him. I mean, we literally, our mothers went to the same beauty parlor. My father knew his father very, very well, knew the president very well. And I've had a very long understanding of him. I have never seen him as a universally liked figure, but he's always been uniquely motivated. And you cannot look at where he is and say he has not been successful in his efforts. You got to see it for what it is. You may like his administration, you may not. But for him to come back and win a second term, for him to win that first term against the machine that was Hillary Clinton, very impressive.
Okay, so when you're looking at, when you step back from the headlines that you're reporting on every day, you look at America right now, what concerns you the most about what is happening in your headlines you're having to report?
The immediate concern is their origin. They're coming from an algorithm that is designed to deliver us the worst. And you can say, well, it's always been it bleeds, it leads. I know. But not like this. And when even local news did, it bleeds, it leads, it's because what? We're talking about protecting yourself, protecting your community. How do you stop the crime? What's going on? That's not what this is. This is, how do I make you upset? How do I make you be opposed to? The division in our country is largely manufactured. You and I know.
Right.
I mean, look, just look at our relationship. You know what I mean? They would want us
to fight
like this. But we've always connected on a human level. I respect you as a person. I like how you are to people. You know, I like how you are about your kids. I like how your disposition is towards your work. Do we disagree on things? Of course, of course. But I would never see you as anything but a friend, even if we disagree. The algorithms are trying to make us not be that way, to see you as an enemy. You're not just wrong. You're not
right.
Just different. You're my enemy. And that's new.
So who benefits from it? You talk about the algorithm. Who is the algorithm? Who's benefiting from this divide?
The people in power and the people who play the algorithm.
Is it as simple as Republican and Democrat, or is it across the board?
No. I mean, look, the binary structure of it, I think, is really damaging.
Okay.
I am not nonpartisan. I am anti-partisan. So was George Washington,
right,
by the way. If I could wave a wand, I would wave a wand, and the parties would not have control of the primary process anymore.
Has this changed, or have you always held this view? Or has this changed over the last 10, 15 years?
No, it hasn't changed, and I'll tell you why. I have changed, but this disposition hasn't because of how I grew up. Politics.
But your family was all Democrat.
Oh, 100%.
Okay.
But, well, yes.
Democrat at that
time. The Cuomo family was.
Right.
My nuclear family. Outside of that, no, it wasn't. There was always a division in my family. You know, Italians, a lot of them are very conservative. And I married into an absolutely Republican family, whom I love to death, the best people. So blessed to still have them both. But raised the way I was raised, politics was a horrible influence on my upbringing. It changed my life in bad ways early on. Watching the media with my father, watching the opposition, watching what it took, watching the prostitution that money introduces into this. I have never had a good feeling about it. There was never any chance that I would go into it. I didn't even like when Andrew went into it. I always felt that he had so much more potential than just politics. And I know a lot of his fans will be like, what are you talking about? He was a three-term governor. I get it. I get it. But as his brother, Andrew is so smart. He's so capable of doing things that I'm more excited about this phase of his life than I was the last chapter of his life. So I've always been anti the system. Always. Including the media system, because they didn't like me either.
The media and politics go
100%.
Hand in
hand. 100%. They didn't want me in it. I couldn't get a job.
Okay,
that's
wait,
why
they didn't
I worked
want you,
at
wait
Roger
a minute. Ailes. Tell me this. How you couldn't get a job, they didn't want you in it, and yet you ended up being the golden child of one of the largest news networks in the world.
Well, I don't know.
You had the primetime shot.
Oh, I was the number one.
Yes.
But I don't think I was the golden child. Anderson is the golden child of CNN, and justifiably so. I don't like why they fired me, but that wasn't Anderson. I wish him well, and I respect him. And I
but
feel like that
about a
lot of people
But you were still the prominent person. They put you on all the toughest stories. They always said,
I did well, but that's why. Because I did well. And my ratings were my resonance there. My relevance were my ratings. If I hadn't rated well, I wouldn't. That's always been the truth for me. Roger Ailes told me that.
And for those who don't know, Roger Ailes is Fox News. So that was the kingmaker at Fox News.
That was my first job.
Okay.
Because I couldn't get a job anywhere else. And they were like, oh, you got to go like to Topeka. I was like, I'm not going to Topeka. I'm a lawyer. I understand things. I don't want to be first at the fire. You know, now I'm a fireman, but I don't want to be the first reporting on a fire. So he gave me a job. He gave me a chance. And he said, if you make it here, I'll teach you everything you need to know as the tools go. And if you fail, you're out. But what do you care? Because you don't really want to do it anyway. So I couldn't get in. And then I got into ABC News after a few years at Fox because they wanted my stories that I was doing. That's why they hired me. Peter Jennings wouldn't even talk to me, may he rest in peace. The big anchor from ABC News. Never accepted.
So
always
the work
renegade.
Ethic.
It was success.
And do you get enough credit for
that?
Do you feel like in all of your okay?
Doesn't
matter.
Okay.
Well, what does matter is because when we come back, we're going to continue this candid conversation with Chris Cuomo about what it really is like to sit at the center of America's biggest stories, how the media has changed from the inside, and why he believes this country might be at a turning point. That conversation is next. Welcome back. Before the break, we told you about a conversation that goes beyond headlines and talking points. Chris Cuomo joins us now to talk about his years inside major newsrooms, the pressure shaping today's media, and what Americans need to understand about the moments that we're living in. Thanks for staying with us, Chris, on this.
Thank you for having me on. And again, I wish you much success.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm going to need it because there's always a changing amount of breaking news that happens, and it does change the newsrooms. Moments like COVID, political unrest, global conflict, journalists are expected to inform without inflaming. But yet, do you feel like the majority of the media currently is successful in not only in just delivering the information and not becoming an accessory to it? Can we just say the who, what, where, and when, and not the why?
You can. You just won't make the same money. You won't get the same clicks. You won't have the same relevance. And, you know, it's a very slippery slope. You get into the business because you want to do it the right way. But so you want to do good. But you got to do well in order to have the platform to do some good. So what does that mean? Well, you got to make money. News business. How do you make money? These days, clicks. Clicks. How do you get clicks? By doing what Megyn Kelly does. By doing what Don Lemon does. By doing what David Pakman does. You know, and all these other pod bros who are provocateurs. And they'll say, well, I'm not a journalist. I don't know what the line is anymore. But you get paid for provocation. That's the way it is right now, which is why the way I do the job is not a great business model. And I understand that. And sometimes it's frustrating. You know, I'll be talking to some kid who's got more people listening to their podcast than I do about politics. And I'm like, how? Because that's what gets paid, is them saying whatever, you know, whatever exaggerated things they're saying about the right or the left.
But isn't that frustrating? Because then you have the American society complaining about how we're divided and how angry we are, and yet the attention they give is to people that are angry and divisive. So who's in charge of this right now? Whose fault is this?
Plenty of blame to go around. I try, the older I get and the more I go through, to divide everything that I'm about professionally and what I control and what I don't control. And you were saying earlier, off camera, you trust your audience. Mm-hmm. That's a beautiful thing, and I hope you always keep it. And it can be tricky to do that, because sometimes they're sending you messages about what they want and what they don't want, and the desire for an echo is deeper than I've ever seen it before in the American people. So I know what I control. I control what I do and how I feel about what is done to me. Everything else, I leave to the noise sphere.
Well, that noise sphere is also, I feel like, having a major effect on politics today. I mean, think about it. We talk about we need campaign election reform, we need finance reform. Do we need media reform? Are you seeing that the media is either manipulating politics or politics manipulating the media? I mean, they go hand in hand right now.
They do. Look, my answer would have been always let the people decide. Let the marketplace decide.
But they're learning from the media. They're getting their information from the media. So are they really getting to decide?
Social media has changed my calculus.
Okay.
Now, look, I'm in social media.
I was about to say, you have a podcast.
No question. No question. I'm in there.
You have a TikTok?
I'm on the platforms. I got all of it. Rose runs the TikTok, but that's okay. That's an upgrade. But I do all of it. I'm doing the shorts. I'm doing them in the car on the way here. I'm trying to play the game. Why? Because if you're going to be in the business, you're going to be in the game. How you play is up to you. But, I've never seen anything like what we're allowing on social media with these algorithms. Because of Section 230 in that, you know, early 90s internet law, that they don't have any responsibility or accountability. And the idea was, well, they're not publishers, and we want the internet to have a chance to get going. Oh, it's gotten going. And they are more publishers than you and your bosses will ever be. They curate content and control what gets to their followers in a way you never could. And they have no responsibility. And they'll tell you, the algorithm is designed, Scotty Nell,
to play to provocation and outrage. That's what sells. You can't say that. You know what I mean? If you said that, right. It hurts this brand.
Absolutely.
If I say that, I got News Nation. I got Sirius XM on me. What are you doing?
So then you have to ask, you know, why is this even be allowed? Do we need more regulation? Where does that fine line of freedom of speech, freedom of the press?
I get it.
Because
I mean,
people use it to tie the noose around your own neck if they don't like you.
I'm so telling you, it is the right question.
How do you get that genie back in the bottle?
I don't know. I mean, look, we both know that the answer is you can't get a genie back in the bottle. You can't close Pandora's box once the salt starts to spread. But I don't know what the answer is. And I think that's okay. I think that often in life, in politics, it's an easy excuse structure. Well, if you can't solve it, then don't complain about it. No, that's not how politics works. Most elections are decided by grievance. And it's not how life works. When in our friendship, when you're like, hey, man, when I send you a message, you send me a message back, and you're not, and that's a problem. Right. Okay, it's not because you know the solution, but you're not happy about it, and we got to work on it because that's a relationship. I feel that way about this. This isn't working, and it's not working because of how it's designed and allowed to work. It doesn't make sense that every other form of media has some kind of strings on it, except the one that is the most corrosive. It doesn't make sense. What to do about it? That's why we have elections. That's why we have leaders. But I'm not one of them.
But do you really feel like, and we're talking about Donald Trump that was literally brought to power because of his ability to handle social 100%. Media and do it in 2016. Do you really feel like you're going to see social media? I mean, they're loving it. Elon Musk, all the social media platforms are loving it because it just brings more traffic to them.
I know.
You're asking the coyote to police the hen's house on
I
this
know.
One. So do you really actually believe that this is ever going to happen? Or is it going to be, are the people finally going to say, we have enough. We need truth and facts that we can't get anywhere right now, especially on social media. Are they just going to give up?
Well, no.
Okay.
I don't believe in ever giving up, ever. You lose, but you don't give up. And that is certainly the American mentality. I don't think it's about truth and facts. I think that the good news is it's more obvious and less ineffable or inscrutable than those concepts. It's, I don't even know if this is real. Is that Scotty Nell Hugh, is that a person?
Right.
Or is it AI? Did he really say that to her? Or did they fake it? You know, did Alex Preddy really kick out that light? I can't tell you how many people are sending me the video and saying, hey, you work on cars. I don't think a taillight can be kicked out like that. It's like, well, how?
And they
how
feel
do we
genuine
know?
About it. They are 100% convicted
100%,
by that.
100%. What's real? What's fake? In the AI age, I think that's a much more basic thing that gives us an avenue of opportunity, which is, well, if you want to go down that road, of how we vet, let's have that conversation. Because right now, the only vetting is on, will this fake video of Scotty Nell Hughes picking up Cuomo and throwing him off the set, is that gonna do well for us? That's the only lens right now. So if you add anything, you're moving in the right direction, in my opinion.
Well, the question is that integrity at some point the people are gonna go, we can't take this anymore. There's got to be a breaking point. Just like there's a breaking point in politics, there's gotta be a breaking point in media that people are going to want to know the truth on this, but...
But they may just say, and that's why I watch Scotty Nell Hughes.
And that's why they should. Thank you, Chris Cuomo, for joining us and sharing your perspective on the media. I really appreciate it. You know, this conversation reminds us why context matters and why experience still counts in an era dominated by noise. Now, Chris Cuomo's career has taken him through the highest levels of American journalism inside major newsrooms and directly into the moments that shape national debate. But what has stood out tonight wasn't just where he's been. It was how clearly he sees the challenges facing the country and the media right now. Today, through his independent platforms and long-form conversations, Cuomo continues to engage directly with the public, free from traditional newsroom constraints, focused on analysis, accountability, and dialogue rather than outrage. And whether people agree with him or not, his work reflects a broader shift and how Americans choose to consume news and whom they trust to deliver it. At a time when confidence in institutions is strained and the country is searching for clarity, conversations like this one matters. They don't solve anything, but they create space for honesty, reflection, and at the very least, a deeper understanding of what's really at stake. Our thanks to Chris Cuomo for joining and to you for taking the time to engage in a discussion that goes beyond the headlines. Until next time, I'm Skynell Hughes, and this has been Perspective.